Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And welcome to a new episode of the Geek Town Behind the Scenes podcast. I'm your host, Dave Elliott, and on this episode, it's something of a stunt special as we have two of this year's Emmy-nominated stunt coordinators. Tom Corey Williams, who is responsible for the action on DC's Doom Patrol, and Brett Chan, who coordinates the martial arts epic Warrior. Up first is Tom Corey Williams, who has hundreds of credits to his name as a stunt performer from shows such as 24, NCIS, Lost, The Walking Dead, and Vampire Diaries, to movies such as Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Avengers Endgame, Spider-Man Homecoming, Ant-Man and Wasp, Baby Driver, and most recently, The Matrix Resurrections. However, we're here mainly to talk to him about his stunt coordinator work on the wonderfully bonkers Doom Patrol. Doom Patrol reimagines one of DC's strangest superhero groups, Cliff Steele, aka Robot Man, played by Brendan Fraser, Larry Traynor, aka Negative Man, played by Matt Boomer, Rita Farr, aka Elasti Woman, played by April Bowlby, Crazy Jane, played by Diane Guerrera, and Victor Stone, aka Cyborg, played by Joanne Wade. If you haven't seen the series, each member of the Doom Patrol has suffered a horrific accident which gave them superhuman abilities but also left them scarred and disfigured. They've been brought together by Niles Calder, aka The Chief, played by Timothy Dalton, to form a, it's fair to say, somewhat dysfunctional family of superheroes. It is a wonderfully and utterly bonkers TV series. If you haven't seen it, you can find it on Starzplay UK and HBO Max in the USA. Tom's other stunt coordinator work includes the Marvel Netflix show The Punisher, which landed him his first Emmy nomination. He's also worked on the pilot for HBO's astonishing Watchmen series and was responsible for the motion capture on a number of video games, including Middle-earth Shadow of War and a number of the Halo games. If you'd like to hear more behind-the-scenes interviews, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast by searching for Geek Town Radio. This will also give you our weekly Geek Town Radio podcast, which brings you all the latest TV, film, and gaming news. You can also go to the website at geektown.co.uk for daily news stories and all the latest UK and US TV premiere dates. Here's the interview with stunt coordinator Tom Corey Williams. Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm good. Where are you based? Are you LA based?
No, I was for almost 20 years. Now, for the last 7 years, we've lived in Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, big film industry there these days.
It really, really is. Yeah.
Sort of Walking Dead and then everything else followed.
Kind of. Yeah.
It's really taken off. A lot of Marvel stuff gets shot there as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, they have a really good deal with called Trilith now. So it's not Pinewood anymore. It's exclusively you guys now over there.
Yeah. But,
yeah, a lot of the Marvel shows and Suicide Squad also shot over at Trilith.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I'm so looking forward to watching that film. It looks immense.
Yeah, I am too. I got called to work on it and wasn't available because of Doom Patrol.
Oh, no.
I wanted to work on it so bad, but it looks great.
Yeah, it looks incredible. That. So you're obviously a stunt performer, and it's always sort of interests me how stunt performers get into that line of work, because, you know, it's not the most obvious thing to get into. So
no, and it's vastly different usually with who you talk to. A lot of people come from pro sports backgrounds,
yeah,
and dance and gymnastics. I got into it. I was a cheerleader in college.
Wow.
National champion collegiate cheerleader, and I was coaching gymnastics.
Cool.
Just working on my degree. And I got hired to coach gymnastics at a live stunt show that had Catwoman in it. I was out there training and working out, and the director saw me tumbling and working out with him, taught me how to take a hit, taught me a high fall. And he was like, oh, I got a guy in the show I don't like. If I fire him, you want a spot? Sure. And then the next summer, he was also doing one of the live Batman stunt shows out in Los Angeles and invited me and a couple other folks to come out there. And I was like, screw it. Let's do this.
Awesome. So you've been involved with DC stuff for quite a while, then.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. That's how I got started with DC. So, and I'm a giant comic nerd, too. So
yeah,
I like to consider all my life since I was about seven research for my career.
Yeah, absolutely. Doom Patrol, which has just landed you your second Emmy nomination. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. I mean,
it's a wonderful show. How long was it before your brain melted when they handed you this first script for it? Because it's so insane.
It really is. And I had read the comics. I'd read Morrison's run and some other ones. And I knew it was already going to be crazy. I don't think I was prepared for how faithful and how even much further sometimes they were going to take it.
Yeah.
I got the first script and I read it and I put it down, talked to my wife a little bit, went back and read it again because I was just like, yeah, a farting donkey. Okay. And I loved it. It wasn't like a, oh my God, it was a, I got to process this for a minute. And then I went back and read it again and just totally fell in love with the way that Jeremy and his team wrote.
Yeah, it's just an insane, insane setup for a show.
Yeah.
Approaching the stunts for something like that, I know there are a number of quite big sequences. One of the big ones was the underwater sequence in the sort of mind where she gets pushed into the well. How did you approach that? Because it was Diane Guerrero actually doing most of that herself, wasn't it?
Almost every bit of it where you see underwater is her. And man, she trained her ass off. I got so excited when I read that. I'm like, we're going to do underwater. We're really going to do it underwater, right? And they're like, yeah, we're building a tank outside the studio. And they did. They built a massive custom tank that's still there. So I started talking to Diane. She'd never done any dive stuff before, but she was super excited. And I got a father-daughter duo, David Paul Lord and Alexis Lord, mm-hmm. to train her. And they were taking her to a dive center. They would get in the pool and just work with her for days on end, getting her comfortable. And they were basically training her like they were going to take her out on a dive trip.
Right.
And get her fully certified. And I mean, with what she did, she should be fully certified by now. Got her used to going without the regulator, holding it in her hand, putting it back in her mouth. Then someone else would hold it, take the mask off, and eventually getting her to where she was so comfortable that she's acting and performing under there, just like she would up on the regular set. And we filmed that. I think it was like 2.5 days we were out there in that tank.
Wow.
To do everything across the two episodes. And she just knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
And had an absolute blast. So she and Sarah Bourne, who played Baby Doll, was in there herself. And then all the rest of the personalities were played by stunt women.
Right. Okay. That's a phenomenal achievement of her managing to do that, you know, just being able to train her to do that as well.
Yeah.
Other sequences, I know you submitted a whole bunch of things for the Emmy nominations. There's a big fight sequence between Robot Man, Cliff, and Jesus for reasons that, I mean, I'm not going to explain. If you haven't seen the show, go watch it.
Oh, please do.
When it comes to a sequence like that, what's actually in the script for you? Is it just they fight and they need to get to a particular point, or do you, what sort of creative control do you have over it?
You know, they had a couple beats in there that they definitely wanted us to hit. But for the most part, all of our writers, you know, the third season with everyone now, two then, we all have a level of trust. They basically just be like, look, pre-vis this, get it back to us, pitch whatever you want. With Jeremy, he's so amazingly collaborative. And he basically is just like, give me whatever you want. If we need to pull back a little bit, we will, but go nuts. And with a show like this, that's really the key, is just going nuts with everything and having fun with it and trying to get as absurd as you can.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'll typically, with something like that, kind of make notes on the script and write things out so I can get a better handle on it. And then we'll start doing some choreography and then we'll start shooting the previs. And I actually got the second unit direct that sequence. So it was great. I just, I filmed it once to present to them. They loved it, made a couple notes, then went and actually did it for real a couple weeks later.
Right, yeah. The second unit directing, I noticed you seem to be doing more and more of that. Is that predominantly the stunt stuff, or are you doing non-stunt stuff as well at this point?
With the DGA rules, with me as a second unit director, it usually has to involve action for me to be involved. Right. That being said, all my bosses are well aware of what I want to do. I want to direct. Mm-hmm. So they're letting me shadow. They're letting me in on meetings and stuff, and hopefully working towards actually getting an episode.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I mean, TV is a great place to do that as well, because
it really is. And the Berlanti company is well known already for letting stunt coordinators come up through the ranks and do that. You know, James Bamford, who did Arrow and Flash and all that, turned into one of their biggest directors.
Yeah, yeah.
So he really set a good precedent for all the rest of us.
Yeah, they're incredibly generous with that stuff. Not only the stunt people, the actors and various other people involved on the show have had chances, which is great that they're doing that.
Yes.
In terms of other big stunts for the show while you've been working on it, is there anything else that particularly sticks out in your mind on Doom Patrol?
My favorite one is still from season one, Robot Man taking out all the Fruktopians, where him and Jane split up and she's switching between different personalities and killing everyone. And he's just destroying everybody in that hallway.
Yeah.
That one was so much fun to do.
Yeah. On a show like this, where you're dealing with those sort of superheroes, I guess there's a lot more things like wire work and mm-hmm. that than maybe there would be on something else. So do you have a preference for the type of show you're dealing with in terms of just the sort of straight fight sequences, or is it fun to do that variety of things?
Yes, they're all fun. Like the more grounded stuff, like say Punisher, you know, there wasn't a lot of wire stuff in that except when explosion would go off. So it was just a lot of brutal killing. Mm-hmm. Still a lot of fun to do.
Yeah.
The stunt performers and the actors have a great time fighting and slugging it out. And then when you get into something like this, where Robot Man or Jane in her Hammerhead persona are going to punch people, they're going to fly across a room and through a wall. I mean, the performer on the wires, first, let me say the harnesses are uncomfortable and they're not that much fun, but getting flung across a room through a wall, I mean, just, we love it. It's a fun gag to do. It's awesome flying through the air. And then the puncher, whether it's Cliff or Jane or anyone else, it's cool. It makes you feel powerful. So it's just neat always seeing the look on their faces, like Diane slugs someone, they go flying across a room and we cut. And she's just like, oh, that was awesome.
In terms of finding performers to do stuff like this, I don't know whether it's easier or more difficult with a show like Doom Patrol, because you've got a number of people that are in masks and prosthetics and that sort of stuff. But then you've also got certain characters like the daughter who has stunt work to do. So what do you do there? Because you obviously can't put a child in that situation or a younger person in that situation.
I was so blessed with that particular one. So the Dorothy actress, Abby, she's tiny. Mm-hmm. And there's a stunt woman named Emily Brobst who I've used many times before. She doubles a lot of kids, doubles a lot of small people. She's like 4'10". 4'10" and 95 pounds, something like that. And especially with the prosthetics on, you couldn't tell the two of them apart.
Yeah.
And there's a great picture of me and the two of them right before she did her float up to put the disco ball up. And it's adorable. They got along great, had a lot of fun together.
Yeah. So,
and with everyone else, it's, you know, you just got to find people who have the skills you need first and foremost, but then look as much as humanly possible like their double. Diane's double, Natasha, looks so much like her when she's in the outfit that people will go up to her and talk to her like she's Diane, especially lately because we're wearing masks.
Yeah.
But then it's a lot easier when you get into the super suit people like Larry and Cliff.
Yeah.
So as long as you've got the right size and body type, they have custom suits made for the stunt doubles, just like they do for Riley and Matthew, the two suit actors.
Yeah. It's like, I remember watching some of the stuff for The Mandalorian, and there's like four people that play that character, and because he's entirely suited the entire time, so you'd never know who was on screen. Have there been, apart from Diane, obviously, with the underwater stuff, has there been any other actors that have really stood out to you in terms of their stunt work, either on Doom Patrol or any of the other projects you've worked on?
Oh man, our cast, our entire cast on Doom Patrol is always so excited to do things. Javan, who plays Cyborg, he'll just come in and train with us because he really wants to get physical and have fun. He's had some good fight moments. Matthew, like I said, Matthew and Riley, who are in the suits, they have stunt doubles, but they're always like, we want to do as much as we can. You know, I had Matthew hanging from the ceiling when he was getting tortured, and Riley. The biggest problem you run into with the suits is you got to really watch everyone, make sure they're not overheating. So we'll trade out as often as we can.
Right. Yeah.
But everyone, Timothy Dalton, here's a great story. So that man, one of your countrymen, is
yes. an
absolute legend in my mind. He wants to do everything. He will hit the ground. He will rough and tumble. I mean, he doesn't care. And I'm not going to say how old he is. I'm not going to mess with him like that. But he's up there and he will get just as much, if not more physical than anyone else in the cast. We had the sequence where we were in the frozen tundra in season one.
Yes.
And when we were doing the stuff out there where he's supposed to fall through the ice, for one of the shots, he's talking to his wife there and he's supposed to fall down and just pretend he's going through. But he's off camera at the time. So I'm sitting there in Video Village and all of a sudden I'm watching and he falls down and hits the ground. And I'm like, oh God, what are you doing? And they call cut. So I go running out there to check on him. I'm like, Timothy, sir, what are you? I go, you don't need to go down. I go, you're off camera. And he grabs my shoulders. He looks at me. He's like, Tom, the lady needs a proper eye line. And I just kind of dropped my head and I was like, consummate professional. And
yeah.
he refused to not fall down. He was like, I have to show her where I'm going.
Yeah.
Wow. I love him for that. Absolutely love him.
Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful actor. Mm. In terms of just a few of the other things you worked on, I noticed your stunt coordinator on this. You do some stunts as well yourself, although I noticed a lot of it is stunt driving these days, I guess, because, I mean, you're a couple of years older than me, and I know I wouldn't be throwing myself around.
Yeah. It's not as fun as it used to be hitting the ground.
Yes.
And that's kind of the benefit of us older fellas. We get the benefit of doing the car stuff.
Yeah.
I remember when I was younger, I've always been into stunt driving. And I remember getting really frustrated when I was young that I wasn't getting the good stunt driving jobs. And now that I'm not young, I understand why I didn't get them then. And I'm appreciative to get them now.
You mentioned that you're in Atlanta, Georgia. I know you did a bit of work on The Walking Dead. You did some stunt driving for them. Did you end up in zombie school? Was it just the driving stuff?
You know, mainly driving stuff. One thing I've done enough of that I don't really want to do anymore is prosthetics.
Yeah.
I don't feel like sitting in a chair for 4 or 5 hours in the morning and then 2 or 3 hours afterwards. So
no,
it's good for the younger kids too.
Yes, definitely. You worked on Watchmen as well, which was an absolutely outstanding series. The pilot and the finale, according to your IMDb, mm-hmm. I don't know whether you did other bits as well, but what were the work you were doing on that?
So on the pilot, I was one of the stunt coordinators.
Right. Okay.
It was myself and Doug Coleman. Mm-hmm. And I actually, right after we wrapped, we hadn't heard when it was going to start the rest of the series. They were trying to figure out scheduling. And that was when I got the offer for Doom Patrol.
Right.
So I'm sitting there. I'm like, God, I was so impressed with that pilot and how it was done and everyone on it. And I knew it was going to be just magical. Mm-hmm. So that was honestly one of the toughest decisions I've ever made.
Yeah.
But I was like, okay, well, Doom's a sure thing. I know when it's going. I know what it's involved. And in retrospect, I think I made the right decision.
Yes, probably.
And also, I quite enjoyed, because the Watchmen property as a whole is one of my favorites. I love the graphic novel. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed watching it as a fan.
Yeah.
I totally, you know, two friends of mine ended up coordinating it, the rest of the series. And I was just the whole time, you know, I wanted to know nothing about it. And I enjoyed the heck out of it.
Yeah, it was just a masterpiece of work. Yeah. I was from start to finish so impressed with that.
Yeah.
I noticed you did some video game work as well on, you did the motion capture for Middle-Earth Shadow of War, Halo 4 and 5 as well. What's that experience like compared to doing the sort of full-blown stunt thing?
I was neck deep in mocap for many years. I was one of the go-to people.
Right.
My wife and I, as a matter of fact, she was a motion capture director and producer.
Oh, cool.
And shortly after we met, I was her stunt coordinator. And then she was teaching me more about the directing side of it. So I started directing mocap and just, it was so much fun. I miss it. The last motion capture project I did was I coordinated the mocap unit for The Great Wall.
Right.
So that's been, you know, a few years now. But the video games, especially the Halo and the Lord of the Rings stuff, I had so much fun with those. A lot of good memories, like Halo 5. I think we worked on that for almost a year.
Wow.
And had an absolute blast. I played a bunch of the creatures in it too, but mainly coordinating. And, you know, you get a little tired of the monotonous motion capture volume, just seeing the same walls and lights over and over, but it's actually a really fun gig.
Yeah, I can imagine. Time's coming up. So last couple of questions for you. So the first question is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
I just got, I'm late to the game on this one, but it got on HBO Max and I just started watching Warrior.
Oh, yes.
Which is one of my fellow nominees, the coordinator, Brett Chan, is actually a good friend of mine.
I'm actually talking to him later on today.
Tell him I said hi.
I will do.
So I'm really enjoying Warrior. I really enjoyed Loki.
Oh, yeah. Phenomenal show.
Yeah, just finished it. My kids and I were way into that. And the one where I've got three sons, 14, 12, and 10. So we watch a lot of stuff together. Mm-hmm. And our current obsession, we actually just got done watching the latest episode of Bad Batch.
Right. Yeah. I haven't watched this week's, but yeah, that's great. Ooh, show as well.
It's good. It's really good.
Yeah, I love that show. I'm working my way through Clone Wars at the moment as well. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Because I'd seen episodes, I just hadn't watched the whole thing all the way through. So yeah. I'm doing that right now.
You seen the last four?
No, not yet.
You are in for a treat.
I'm about halfway through season six, I think, at the moment. So
okay, the final four I would put up against pretty much any Star Wars movie.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It gets better and better as you go through that as well.
I want to work with Dave Filoni in the worst way. That dude's a hero.
Well, that may lead on to my last question. If you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, can be something from the past, something present, or some sort of future genre, what would it be?
Star Wars. I mean, it's what got me into the business. I am those original three movies I can watch all the time, and I do with my children. So I am so excited about all the stuff they're doing, the explosion of the whole platform. But obviously, you know, Doom Patrol season four, hopefully that happens.
Yeah.
But
I hope so too. I love Doom Patrol. It's a wonderful, wonderful series. And they're making lots of Star Wars stuff. I mean, I'm sure something will come your way eventually.
Yeah, hopefully.
Awesome. Well, I'll let you go because I know you've got more interviews and stuff to do. So hopefully we'll talk to you again in the future. It's been lovely.
Absolute pleasure talking to you.
And you. Cheers.
Bye.
So that was the interview with Tom Corey Williams, stunt coordinator on Doom Patrol, which you can find on Starzplay UK and on HBO Max in the USA. The second interview is with Brett Chan, stunt coordinator on the martial arts epic Warrior. From Banshee creator Jonathan Tropper and Fast and Furious' Justin Lin, based on an original concept and treatment by the legendary Bruce Lee, Warrior is a gritty action-packed crime drama set during the brutal Tong War of San Francisco's Chinatown in the late 19th century. The series follows Sam, played by Andrew Koji, a martial arts prodigy who emigrates from China to San Francisco under mysterious circumstances. After proving his worth as a fighter, he becomes a hatchet man for the Hop Wee, one of Chinatown's most powerful tongs. In the interview, we discuss getting emotion into the fight sequences and evolving the action to drive the plot. We also discuss getting in those Bruce Lee-isms without coming on too strong, and also talk about sending Andrew to China to study karate and fight techniques to bring culturally authentic fight choreography to the show. Along with working on Warrior, Brett has also worked on CW's Kung Fu, so we chat about the differences between the two shows. He also worked on two seasons of the wonderful Snowpiercer, and that comes with its own challenges of creating fight sequences in incredibly tight spaces. His latest project saw him jump on the upcoming Paramount Plus series Halo, based on the video game franchise, as he tackled the action there with a very, very fast turnaround. So here's the interview with Warrior stunt coordinator Brett Chan.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
before we start to get into the shows you're working on, a little bit of background about you. How did you get into the industry in the first place?
I had really no inclination. Well, I mean, I did. I mean, I've always thought about it, but I just never really thought I would ever really get into it. I was based off of these TV shows I was watching like way back in the day called Vanishing Sun.
Right. Okay. You know,
with Russell, her last name already. Anyways, it was a show about two brothers and one getting the gangsters and one trying to get them out of it. And then every other week it changed. It was Hercules on the next week. They're basically going vice versa every week.
Right.
And then I moved from Toronto to Vancouver and I was going to school, my pre-meds. I was doing my kinesiology and human kinetics. And I was working at a nightclub as a doorman. And I met this girl and we were just dating a little bit and she had just opened up her own talent agency. Mm-hmm. And she said, "Hey, do you want to be in it?" I'm like, "Sure, why not?" You know?
Yeah.
I got a commercial called the Karate Fighters. It's the toys where you put them on top of these little sticks, you spin it and they throw punches and kicks.
Oh, cool.
And then you're challenging somebody. And then when you do that, you hit the center part of their body and then they go flying off their little stick thing. So I was on that and I loved it. And I loved it even more after I saw my first check. And I was like, "Holy crap." And then I met some guys that were on Ninja Turtles and they had me come out to audition for the TV series. And I said, "Yeah." I jumped on and I got it. And so I just kind of started my career. But, you know, I still finished school. So I'm an RMT. I'm a registered, I'm not registered anymore because I don't practice anymore, but a sports rehab massage therapist.
Right.
So I got into that. And then once I finished school, I was doing stunts at the same time as well, part-time as a stuntman because, you know, you're a contract worker, so you're not always working all the time, unless you're one of the regular guys who are working all the time. But I mean, I'm 5'8" and, you know, 200 plus pounds. I'm shaved head, tattoos, Asian guy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get any doubling parts. I'm not going to get like the Joe Smo just walking down the street. I'm generally always the bad guy, or yeah. I'm in an outfit that makes me double a bad guy or a monster, something like that. So,
yeah.
So that my work was sporadic at that time until I finished school and I was like, "Okay, I'm going to pursue this full time." And I just started doing that full time. And that's how it started.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you set up an agency and stuff? And
no. So, you know, there's strength in numbers. You know, the industry is not very forgiving when it comes to trying to break into it, obviously, because there's limited work. And a lot of people don't want to try to work on it. So everybody wants to see you do well, but no one really wants to see you do better than them, kind of thing. So,
yeah.
And it becomes a very superficial thing. I mean, you're working a lot of people, like there are good people who are generally happy for you, but there are people that are like, they're happy for you, but they're like, "Well, why didn't I get that part?" Because you're all really going for the same parts.
Yes.
You're going for the same work. Right. So it's hard not to get swallowed up in that, especially when you're like, you're both contract workers. And let's say, you know, your buddies work like 5 days already and for the month and you've worked none. It just becomes that moment, you know, and humans are humans. It doesn't mean people are bad people. Some people are, but I mean, people just like, you know, they obviously want to try to pursue their dreams. So I started Hits International. Hits International is at first started off as an international promotional site for people that I wanted to work with.
Right.
Because we go away on these jobs for like 6 to 8 months or whatever it is. It can be a long time. And you want to be able to work with people that you enjoy.
Yeah.
That you can trust and you can have fun with.
Yeah.
And you don't want to throttle after being like an hour with them, kind of thing. Because especially if you're away in a job somewhere, I mean, they become your family when you're away. Hits International was meant for that first because I'd been traveling around the world and been working with a lot of people. Like, they're just fantastic. And I would never have met them if I didn't travel and work. And then it just started rolling into, it became a team. So we're like a team now, stunt team, comprised of second directors, stunt coordinators, stunt performers, fight choreographers, horse masters, you know, kind of thing. So we're all kind of professional. So, you know, if I get a show, let's say Halo, okay, well, I need these skills so I can go through the roster and say, okay, him, or her, they have these skill sets. I'll pull them on the show. So now the team's all working together. And we're all accustomed to working together. We are all on the same mindset because we're on the same team. That's one of my mandates, that if you get voted in, because it's a voting system by the rest of the team, you have to have the same mindset as everyone, because there's no use in bringing someone on who's like the best of the best, but he's a complete jackass.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, it's a representation of me. Mm-hmm. Ideally, like birds of a feather flock together kind of thing. And also professionalism. And also, I want to enjoy my time. If I have to deal with you over 6 months and hate my job, then it's really all for nothing.
Yeah, that's a great way of doing it, though, you know, because it gives you a set of people, like you say, I mean, particularly in your business, you want people that you know you can trust and you can rely on and can do it.
100%.
That's absolutely a wonderful way of doing it. So Warrior, which is the big thing that you've been working on quite recently, presumably some of the guys from Hits International are involved in that as well.
Yeah. I mean, there's only 26 members, so I can't comprise everybody. And not everyone has those skill sets that we need. Mm-hmm. So I just try and bring the core guys that I need. Like Johnny Yang and Jason Ning are usually my right-hand, left-hand men.
Yeah.
We're dealing with assisting, coordinating, cover coordinating, everything like that. Because I know I can trust someone and we all work together. I mean, and when I'm directing, I'm looking at something on the monitor and I can just say, let's take it. I go, hey, Johnny. He'll go, yeah. And I don't even have to say what it is. He already knows kind of thing what I'm looking at and what I didn't like. So, and same thing with Jason. So that's going along that way. So I had, I think like 8-9 members on Warrior season 2, and 2 of them are from South Africa. So that works out great.
Right.
The other guys I bring in. The supplementary guys are guys I need that certain looks, skill sets that I need. They're not on the team, but I know they're still going to be good guys, or they're referred to by someone that's a member on the team.
Yeah.
And so I know that they know what I'm looking for, because if they recommend someone and bring someone in that's a complete douche, they're going to get it from me. It's just going to be like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah.
And they understand. So they're hesitant to recommend people who they don't know very well, because they'll just never hear the end of it from me.
It's a great system, though. That seems to work really well. Warrior itself is quite an interesting show, because it was originally developed by sort of Bruce Lee way, way back in the day. And then it's taken kind of this long to work its way onto screen. So in terms of the action that you're producing for that, you're trying to sort of pay homage to Lee in the movement and the what you're doing with it. But obviously, Andrew Koji, the lead, isn't Bruce Lee. So how are you handling that without sort of completely trying to mimic Bruce Lee?
Well, I mean, from my understanding, I mean, when Bruce Lee started writing this outline, it wasn't never meant to be Bruce Lee. It was meant for him to play it.
Yeah.
And however mannerisms he played, which is probably going to be himself, I mean, that was kind of to go. But with this, it's more about the homages that they play to Bruce Lee are written in the script and things that they want to see.
Right.
Because they don't want to put Bruce Lee moments everywhere, because it just becomes too much.
Yeah.
They put Bruce Lee moments in certain appropriate times when we need it for certain fights. And that can relate to whatever in a moment where in this situation we got cut here, or his movement when he does this, or, you know, he does that, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But Andrew Koji, and, you know, nobody really wants to try and be Bruce Lee unless this character is supposed to be Bruce Lee.
Yeah, sure.
You can't. And you're going to set yourself up to failure if you're trying to play a character and try and emulate Bruce Lee in it. So Andrew, I think, does it really well, because we have lots of conversations. He wants to be able to mimic certain things, but it's more the idealism of how he utilizes his martial arts and how it's combined with several different martial arts as opposed to one. Bruce Lee's mantra was always like, you hybridize things. It's not all just one system. It can't be. So when I do the fight choreo for Andrew, I talk with him and see where he wants to go, certain things. Okay, great. And so now I know where he's at mentally as a character in the story, and mentally as a character, depending on where it is in the story. If he's in desperation mode, if he's like just trying to mess around with guys, people, if he just wants to kill somebody, then you'll notice how his moves will change and how he does it aggressively or not aggressively or playfully. And that's him playing that. And that's after the choreo's already done and he's taken to what he wants from it. Mm-hmm. So we never try and just create Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
But the idea we give him, the tools that he uses to execute what he has to do, well, you'll be able to say, oh, that's a little bit of this, or that's a little bit of that, that's a little bit of this, but it looks a little bit different because now it's the way Andrew's going to move, which is cool. And Andrew always does things that give that moment to Bruce Lee. Like, you know, when he gets the nunchucks and he goes, he holds the nunchucks this way, and when he does the move, when he puts his hands out kind of thing, he gives those moments. He'll give Bruce Lee-isms. We call it Bruce Lee-isms.
Right. Yeah.
He did Bruce Lee-isms, which is very satisfying for Shannon and Jonathan Tropper and Brad Kane. They're always talking about that, and they're very conscious about not doing too much Bruce Lee, or, okay, now we're going to do, he did this in this movie, this in this movie, this in this movie. So we're going to put all three in one fight. No, it's just too much.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And then we'll give it the flair that Andrew wants to give it. But the character moments all built in from him.
Yeah. When you first got involved with Andrew and doing the work on the show, what sort of prep work did you do with Andrew? Because, I mean, I know he's a martial artist anyway, but I'm guessing there are particular types of things you needed for the show. So,
you know, Assam, his character was meant to be a really fast character. And we always try and use destructive methods for him. So it's like Bruce Lee always talked about, like, you know, when someone throws a punch at you, you know, so he can't use that punch again, blocking your elbow, and then you'll break his hand. So now he can't use his hand. So right. with him, we always kept that speed moments and a little bit more destruction moments for him so that he can give that. So those styles I would take from him, from other martial arts, and try and create it and put it within a hybridized motion. So he doesn't have a particular style, but he has those tools that he can pull out. And with him, we use a lot of theory that Bruce Lee always talked about. So, you know, he did an extensive research on martial arts and Bruce Lee as well. So he kind of understands what he's talking about. So when we're doing choreography, he can add his flair, and it's fantastic. He does it so well. So I bring him in, I train him on a series of different martial arts, but you can't keep it all the same all the time because people get kind of bored of watching that. Yeah. Oh, he's going to do this, he's going to do that. So on season one, because he doesn't have a base, he's a martial artist, but he hasn't done it in a while. Mm-hmm. He's a tricker. So he knows, he has good body awareness. So we get him into some Wing Chun and we do a little bit of this, a little bit of this. Okay, he has a little bit of this. Okay, great. Now season two, now he does, he has this weapon skills already. So season two, you know, we send him to Korea and he trained with two masters there, specifying on a realistic military martial art, which is called TKD.
Right.
And then also with a Taekwondo grandmaster as well, so that we can amplify his kicks. Because in the actual show, if you watch it, no one really throws kicks like him. Like Joe will throw kicks every once in a while, but he's more power-based and grabbing and breaking, right? Which Bolo was kind of like, every time he struck something was breaking kind of thing, because he was meant to be that strong character. And Chen, you know, Hong, he had the weapon and he could throw kicks every once in a while, but he had that whip weapon. And Jason Tobin wasn't really throwing kicks, like fancy kicks. He'd throw a front kick here and there, whatever it is, but he had knives, you know? And everyone that was in the show had their own little thing. And everyone else was just kind of like, you know, general thugs or whatever it is. So, or in episode six, where he had specialty martial artists from around the world coming in, from capoeira to a taekwondo specialist to a judo guy to, you know, the guy with the claws, which is played homage to Bruce Lee's. So, you know, that's how we kind of mess with that. But Andrew, not only that, though, all the actors would come in the morning. We have a whole training regime. We do a whole training with the whole team, because on my team, there was like, I think like 9 different countries, and, you know, they weren't all speaking the same language. So I had to integrate them. And also to integrate them too, you have to integrate the actors in there so they trust the stunt guys and then they're not going to get hurt. Understand? So you create a relationship with everybody. And by that time, I couldn't get anybody out of the gym because everybody just wanted to be there all the time and hang out and train there all the time. And it was like, get out, guys. I got work to do. But can I just hang out in the corner over here? Like, Hoon Lee. Like, Hoon wasn't always on. And he doesn't have that much action, but he's so athletic. So he just, I'll just hang out in a little corner over here. And I'll just do some boxing and I'm like, oh, okay, no worries. And it's cool. But it was very nice to see that they wanted to do that all the time. And they wanted to train. They wanted to be there. The show Warrior was an enigma. It doesn't happen very often where you have all the casts are fantastic. The stunts, the crew, the shooting, the camera, the production team, the producers, everyone's on board to make this what it was. And it was just great. So our training regime is after we train, then afterwards, we have a specific training section for all our actors. Training session, martial arts. Okay, then Dean will go here. He'll train with this person here. Joe will go over here. He'll train with this person. Andrew will go over here. He'll train with this person over here. And they all have different little things I'm training with each of them to prepare them for their fights.
In terms of the actual sequences on the show, how is that sort of written on the page? And how much sort of creative freedom do you end up getting to? Because I guess there must be certain points that, you know, they have to hit as they go through a scene.
Yeah.
But how much of that is scripted out and how much is stuff that it's then just handed over to you to choreograph?
What's good about with this show especially is that I was able to gain the trust of Jonathan Tropper after season one, episode one, and he saw certain things. Jonathan Tropper himself is a martial artist and he's fantastic at nunchucks. If you ask him, if you ever interview and ask him, hey, JT, can you show us some nunchucks? He's really good. And so, and he's an avid Bruce Lee fan. So he knows all Bruce Lee isms. He knows almost, he knows that stuff. So JT will, when he writes, at least he'll write the whole fight sequence.
Right.
He'll be like, okay, Brett, I know I'm writing this stuff, but I know you could probably make it cooler. So, you know, take it away. Just go do what you want to do. Just keep me these 3 points in there. I want to see this arc in there. I want to see this happen. And I see this one homage happen. Okay, great. No worries, JT. So I'll talk to the director. The director will be okay. Like, especially if you've got like someone like Lonnie Pister, who's fantastic. You should interview him. He's so good. He has such a great vision. He comes from a Viz FX background. So he sees everything like in a grand scheme and he knows how to compartmentalize things when he needs his team to do for him when he needs, as long as they keep his vision. And I'll go create the fight based off of JT's notes, script notes, and the director. And then I'll go create it all. I'll make sure I keep all those points in there. And JT will say, I want to see this arc happen a little bit later. Or I want to see this move happen a little bit sooner. I'm like, okay, great. But he generally likes everything. He just kind of adjusts something here and there. And they allow me to do to when I'm directing, they allow me to choreograph and direct even the drama within the actual fight itself.
Oh, right. Cool.
Yeah. Which is where I'm headed to. So, you know, get directing and stuff like that. So, yeah. So that's what he does. He lets me pretty much take full reins. And that's why it's like an anomaly, because a lot of times in these shows, there's so much politics and there's so much like, you know, there's 15 different producers who want to say something, then the editor will say, no, this should be this. And, you know, it just be like, it's one of those folds. But the way I shoot it is that I'll pre-visit. I say, okay, JT, this is exactly how it's going to look like this. If we shoot it exactly like this, he goes, okay, Brett, you shoot it. So I make sure I shoot it exactly like that. Storyboards, story beats, acting beats, everything like that. Exactly how they detail, they like it. You know, they'll let me, I give the notes to the actors. They let me deal with that. But it's a shot in a way where you can't really edit it differently.
Yeah.
Now, there's nothing against editors. Editors are, they do their job. That's what they do great. But a lot of times editors, one, aren't martial artists. Two, aren't having the notes there with JT. Three, aren't in the actor's head and what's going on. Four, they're not living that story. So they'll maybe put this move instead of this move because you give them two different angles, but it didn't work. But to them, they don't know the difference. And so we need to tell the story how it was meant to be told. And so JT allows me to do that. And so when I shoot it with the intention of only like, it can only be edited a certain way.
Yeah.
And that's the way that's meant to be.
There is a certain unique thing about editing, particularly with martial arts stuff, in the way that those sort of things are shot anyway, in the on normal fight sequences on shows, it tends to be quick cuts, close-ups. You know, there's a lot of that. Whereas because it's almost so balletic and choreographed with martial arts things, you don't want to do that. You want to be further out. You want to see what's going on. So that's the other thing with the editing, I think. So if you're directing it as a martial artist, I think that makes a huge difference.
Right. And I know the story arc and everything with the actors and things like that. So there's different ways of shooting action. And in season one, JT had brought this camera set system and it was just very different. It doesn't move as fast. It's a big rig and you have to move it around. And so we wanted to keep that motion. It's not just like cut. Because then that becomes like a generic, you know, Hong Kong style fight or whatever it is, which is sometimes I feel it loses the North American audience.
Right.
Because it's very Asian-esque how it's shot. So we tried to create a little bit more different where it's not all cut. It's moving. And basically the fight, like the moves will find the way to the camera as opposed to camera always finding where the moves are.
Yeah.
That, you always have to script, cut, pan. So we'll add that in every once in a while, but it doesn't become the main staple of how it's shot. Mm-hmm. And I think that tells a little bit more of a brusque story when you let it breathe a bit and it gets more acting out of it as opposed to just action.
Yeah, absolutely. On Warrior, is there one specific sequence that really sticks out to you that you put together?
You know, the things that really grip to me are not necessarily just the fighting scenes. It's more about the emotional content that's happening within the actual fight. Episode 5, we're at a breaking point with Joe, Leong, and Xing. And Leong's going through this terrible turmoil thing. So him and Hoon come up with this plan to frame Xing and get him out of the way. It helps the police. He set this whole thing up. I mean, if you've seen the show, then you'll know. But Joe particularly lives those moments like has such disdain for Xing that it didn't even matter. And Xing gives his whole speech. He is, because he's very cocky. You know, he's very the way he is. You know, Joe, you don't have the balls to do this. So just for that, when I'm done with you, I'm going to take my Ling. I'm going to have my way with her. I'm going to cut her heart out. I'm going to piss in the hole. And it was just so emotionally driven. You go into Joe and his first word is like, fuck you. Every move wasn't just like a fight. It was like an emotional driven move to everything just to get through. And even before that, the sword fight coming down the stairs, you know, he was very like every stab, every cut. There was such savagery, almost like he's going to stab this guy in the armpit. It's going to especially hurt you in the armpit. Think about a knife going in your armpit. It's just like, oh. But how he did it and how he looked at him afterwards, it's like he wants to stab in the armpit so the guy's ancestors feel it, you know, kind of thing. And it was just so savage and visceral. So that was, so emotionally charged and driven. And then Big Bill coming with the gun. And he obviously had a lot more at stake to it because he had to frame this guy, get him out of the way. His wife was almost killed. It was just like insane. So that whole episode was so emotionally driven and not just through the characters, but through the action. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like a fight. Or the final fight with Dean and Assam, Larry and Assam. I mean, every move, and if you watch some of the moves, they kind of trace back to season one, episode 10, when they had their brief little scuffle when, and some things kind of happened. And we showed how they all learned from each other and how they changed the move from the countering. So, and those guys were so emotionally charged. Gene was like the almighty great white hope. And Andrew's coming in to like, you're it's going to end, you know, and his line, the end was, and don't come into Chinatown or I'm going to bring an army kind of thing. And that was very dead set. Or the precursor to that, when Dean and Andrew were sitting at outside the factory and they had a talk, he's like, you know, you come into our town, try and take our jobs, you know, and he's like, do I look like I want your job? Because, by the way, the Americans are treating you, it's almost like you might as well just be Chinese, you know, because they're treating you like dirt. They're giving your jobs away to us. So
yeah,
the characters are so emotionally driven, and I thought they were just fantastic. Or if you watch Jason Tobin, when he goes into the laundromat,
right,
it's in the riot, he's running by, and it's like, now it's no longer about Leon, about the Tongs, or about Mei Ling and you know, Father June. It's about Chinese, and they're standing up for their rights at this point, because how they're treated. And the same thing, you watch that fight. Jason does that fight with so much more brutality. And when he's stabbing somebody and stuff like that, those kind of things, when I can actually portray that, or I can show that. And if you, as a viewer, you see that emotion driven through that movement, because maybe, you know, he just wants to stab this guy because he's pissed off at him. Or, no, this is different. Yeah. Now, I'm stabbing you to kill you now. I don't want to just injure you. You're going to die, or I'm going to make you, this is going to hurt, or, you know, like that. It's just going to be. It's like, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I know myself, my friends, when we were kids, because I have a Filipino background, like I'm half Filipino, that, you know, when my mom was scolding me when I was a kid, didn't just spank you, they pull out their slippers, you know?
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm going to spank you so hard, your mouth is going to bleed. You know, you're like, whoa, crap. As a kid, that's just so, and it's kind of like that feeling. You want to instill that fear or that, get that emotion out of you. It's not like, I'm going to spank you. No. I'm going to spank you and your mouth's going to be like, oh, crap. Okay.
Yeah.
So that was the kind of feeling. Yeah. I'm trying to induce in there.
Yeah. Warrior's not the only kind of martial arts based show you'll be working on recently, because you're on Kung Fu as well, which one's a sort of very adult, the other one's a network show. So what's the sort of difference for you dealing with the pieces in Warrior compared to something like Kung Fu?
Kung Fu, I only did the first five episodes. I did the pilot, and then afterwards, then I was out of it. So, I mean, they had definitely a different tone for the show, and they still wanted to keep the moment of, like, she's still kind of in peril, in the beginning at least, when the lead, Jalan's going to kill Olivia, she's going to fall down over the cliff. They didn't want it to be all wiry, like Crouching Tiger style. They want it to be still kind of grounded, because it still has to be real. I think once you get into that realm of, like, all wires and like that, it changes. You might as well, you know, you're watching superhero shows, they're all doing that. So it's, they want it to be a little more grounded and something a little more real. So when we did that, it was more about creating the flavor for their action and the characters, again, driven through their emotion. So my basis, you know, Jilan is the lead bad girl and Pei Ling was the master, and they're both masters. Whereas Olivia was just a student who was very good. So anytime I did any kind of fight scene, which is only one between Pei Ling and Jilan, that was the one that was always a little bit more heighted, a little bit more stylized, like with the snake or the tiger or, you know, kind of stuff like that. And then once Olivia comes in and she starts during the course of the episodes, it's a little more grounded, and we don't for show all tiger, snake. It doesn't go like that, because who does that?
Yeah.
World, right? Even if you see martial arts fighters who do that kind of stuff, if they get in the street, they just admit they're not going to be doing like this stuff. It's not going to work. So we give the practical application of the move, like the tiger grab, you know, but we won't actually do tiger. And so, but you'll notice it as a martial artist, you'll notice, oh, that was kind of a tiger move, or that was this kind of move, or the strike that comes out this way as a snake. But it doesn't, we don't do all this stuff.
Yeah.
Because then if you're doing that, you see her fighting, like, say, three bad guys, gangsters or thugs, or it'd be tough, and she's doing this stuff, you'd be laughing.
Yeah.
So we just create it within the motion, and then we'll add like a punctuation to her moment after, like if she hits somebody like with a tiger strike, and then now we stop for a second, you see her, and that's like, you see a tiger hand, but it's not like we're focusing this stuff. It's just like, boom, we see that happen, we move. So you have an element of, oh, okay, that's her training, and still keep that going with her.
Yeah.
Olivia was fantastic. Olivia was like, you know, she's not a martial artist, but she when she first arrived, she called me up, Brett, I don't care what we do, I want to train 7 days a week. So she came here for pilot. We were training 7 days a week. Sundays, she would come train in the morning. She'd go to costume fitting. She'd come back. She'd train for another 2 hours. She'd do a hair makeup. She'd come back. She'd another 2 hours. Wow. And that was every day, because she just wanted to make sure that she did a good job. And same with Vanessa. Same with Jalan and Eddie, you know, the same thing, which is great, because I try and create a family with the stunt family with the actor. It's a very big thing. You have to have a trust.
Yeah.
so you don't hurt each other, and you're mindful of that. Some actors don't care, and they're hitting you. And you know, I've had friends that had, you know, the actor don't care and put him like in a seizure, you know, because he was punching him. And I won't mention the actor's names, but another friend of mine got hit in the eye, and his eyeball blew out on the inside, you know. Or guys like knocking people out on purpose because they figure that they're martial artists so they can do it. You know, stunt guys should hit. Or, So we got to create this family unit with the actors as well as with our stunt performers. It just works out for the best because then the actors just want to come train with us all the time, which is what I want. Yeah, which is great.
Absolutely. The other show you worked on, Snowpiercer, as well. That must be an interesting one for you to deal with because the environments you're working in are incredibly restrictive because the entire thing is based on a train. So how is it working out sequences for that?
Extremely challenging. When they said, okay, we have to create a riot scene here, Brett, but you know, we have certain budget controls and you're in a train with bunk beds and things inside there. And you have to do this fight scene with long weapons, short weapons, all these things. And you only get 3 stunt guys and you have 3 actors and you have 15 to 20 extras that are surrounding you that you can't hurt. You can't touch. You can't hit them.
Wow.
So it's being able to create that at the same time, again, getting the trust from the actors so they understand that where we are and basically putting my stunt guys in an arrangement where we can kind of protect the background so they don't get hit or even by accident because stuff happens. Rise up, stuff happens. But the extras have been great. They all want to get in there. Said, relax. And and that's how we create that. But I mean, it's definitely challenging. And, you know, the trains are smaller because I guess the original Snowpiercer they were making and it went away after a while. They shot the pilot and then they didn't like it. So 2 years later on, they came back and they redid all the train cars and they shot the pilot again. Mm-hmm. And the train cars were just too big. It was like, this is not a train. You can't believe there's a train. So then they came back and they redid the whole designer set again because they went to 3 designers for the first season.
Yeah, I've interviewed, can't remember the guy's name, but the guy that did the production design on it, I did an interview with him.
Season 1 or 2?
Season 1. He was the guy that set up a lot of the cars in season 1. Barry Robinson.
Barry, yeah. So Barry came in. So there's the first pilot they shot. They didn't like it. They only kept 2 scenes from the whole first pilot.
Yeah.
They kept the water scene where the actors are swimming in there naked and they kept the cows.
Yeah.
But everything else they scrapped. And they recast and they came back. So we reshot the pilot again. So that designer was gone. And then they brought another designer to start building for just reshoot the first pilot again. And then he left. Then Barry came on and then Barry did the show and created the train. So you know, he had to make it grittier. We had to make it smaller and grittier and compact. Only certain cars like the night car or the dining car were bigger.
Yeah.
Really, everything else was much smaller. Literally like a train. Like you have to be like, I think it was like 10 feet across and like 20 feet long before you hit each thing. Yeah. So there wasn't much room. So maybe 12 feet wide. But by the time you put the bunks in, which are like 4 feet on each side, then you only have like 3 feet, not even 4 feet between the 2 bunks. So you're creating fights between that. And it's definitely challenging. But, you know, we do it and the guys are always good. We get some rehearsal time, then a rehearsal space, and I'll build the train car in boxes.
Right.
So we know exactly how much room we have.
Yeah,
we put boxes in there. Yeah, the bunks to create the beds. And we do all sorts of things there. And then now we created it. So now we know the parameters of what we have. And I can tell them, I said, no, I can't fit 20 extras in here. I can fit 15 extras in here and I got to put them over here. I'm like, okay. Then I need these last stunt guys because they have to do the fight and still keep our extras safe and our actors safe. So, okay.
I remember the riot sequences in that. You wouldn't know that it's that few people doing it. It comes over really well. I mean, it comes over like a full-blown riot. So good job. It's a great show as well. And that's just been renewed for a full season as well, hasn't it? They've just done season 3.
Well, I didn't do season 3.
Yeah, okay.
I did season 1 and 2. I had to leave season 3 because I went to Halo.
Yes, I was going to say that is the other thing you've been working on. Yeah, interestingly, we were talking about before I started recording, Thomas Courtney Williams did the mocap for Halo 4 and 5, the video game.
The game.
And you're doing the TV show, which I'm really looking forward to because it looks like it's going to be really interesting. I know you won't really be able to tell me anything about that because...
I know they were shooting over 3 years. What happened was it was going, then something COVID hit, so it stopped and they went back again and they were going again and then COVID hit and they stopped. They went back again. So the original coordinator got let go off the show for personality reasons, work reasons, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then they called me to kind of come in. The problem thing was that he had 14 months to create all the action for the show and it wasn't really done. And then when I got on board, so we had limited time, you have 4 weeks to create all the action. I was like, and, you know, like shooting, it's like you have episode one, you do the action, then you have like 2-3 weeks and you have episode two, you know,
yeah.
you can have time, but this wasn't the case because they shot all the dialogue. They shot all the acting, they shot most of that. So all they had left was mainly the action. So that it was basically episode like 9-1, I want to say 4-5 and then 8-7.
Yeah.
But it was literally action, 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 because everything was already shot. So they'd only scheduled for all the action to be continuous. But having to develop all the action going, and it was really hard. And plus, I'm a new guy in the blocks. I kind of showed up. But the team did really well. And we had our trials and tribulations and our problems. And we're all fighting in the trenches together. And,
yeah.
And that's the idea.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to that when it lands. It's a really interesting looking show. And yeah, the video games are great. So I know it's a huge franchise. So I really hope it lands well. Last couple of questions for you. First question is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
You know, I haven't had a chance to really stop and watch anything. I've just been so busy. But okay, well, if I talk like all shows, like I'm a big fan of Korean films and shows. Like I love the way they shoot. Love how their actors are always fantastic. One of my favorite TV shows is, it's like on Netflix. It's called Kingdom.
Yes.
Man, it's just the acting, the politics, the everything is just... The zombies, it's such a good, great show. I just love it. I'm waiting for Ozark, the next season to come out.
Yeah.
That show is definitely, I love that show. Yeah. What else? Good Girls. Have you seen Good Girls?
Yes, I've seen that. One of my co-hosts is completely obsessed with that show
I love that show. I really love that show. The actors are great.
One last question for you. If you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, can be something from the past, something present day, or some sort of future genre, what would it be?
First and foremost, Warrior.
Obviously. I should say, not a show you've been working on. Let's rule those out.
Well, I know they're talking about Halo season 2, so I don't know. It's all up in the air kind of thing. Well, there's a show coming out right now that they're going to start shooting, which I was really trying to hopefully try to get a shot on, was The Continental.
Yes.
I would really have loved to have been part of that. There was a fleeting hope that I was going to be able to get on it. Fleeting hope. And then it just kind of went away.
Yes, that's the John Wick sort of TV show. That looks like it's going to be immense.
I think it's a miniseries, I think, so it's not even that long, but that would have been kind of cool. I just wanted to be able to still keep the same elements what they have for John Wick, but I wanted to see if I could add my flavor a little bit to it and how that would work. You know, it's not necessarily I can make it better or not. You know, I like the concept. John Wick 1 was, for me, a really, really good movie. I really enjoyed John Wick 1. Mm-hmm. And I felt that there was a lot of action, but I also felt that there was so much action, but there was a lot of like moments where they were letting them breathe and do things. And I'm a fan of Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
You know, Chad and Dave, I mean, they're hitting the world by storm. I mean, they're doing fantastic stuff. And Continental would be something that I would like to try to on at some point.
Yeah, good choice. All right, I shall let you go and get back to your day. Thank you for chatting with me. Hopefully we'll get to a chance to talk in the future.
Sure.
Cheers. See you.
Bye. Bye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.